This is Practical Software, the show that seeks out strategies, methodologies, and technologies that make software engineering projects succeed.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Practical Software. As always, I'm Sanjeev Nambutri, and today I have with me Jason Shadwald. Jason, as some of you may remember, has been with us before, and you may remember from then that he's the product manager for the language products at Parasoft, a company looking to integrate development testing, app testing, and service virtualization to reduce the time, effort, and cost of turning out reliable software. Jason represents the customer needs within Parasoft, and today we'll be talking about test quality and the effectiveness of legacy tests. So welcome again to the show, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. So Jason, we've talked a bit about testing in the past, and let's kind of continue on that theme. So one perception is that a lot of the investment within organizations is for new technology. But there is, of course, a lot of time and money spent on maintaining older systems, as you know, organizations are loath to do away with old systems, old tests, and those, you know, whatever implications they have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So to your mind, how can an organization deal with these kind of issues? How should they kind of calibrate their thinking?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it really goes back to thinking about test quality, right? You've got the two things going on. One is you're constantly creating new tests, especially in a continuous testing environment. You want more and better tests that increase your code coverage. But then you have this large amount of legacy tests, just like you have your legacy code. And hopefully those are correlated to some extent. And the question that comes up very frequently is not usually, what do we do with our legacy tests? It's, oh, well, our testing is taking so long because we have these legacy tests. And the question that people are not asking is, well, what is the value of those tests? Mm-hmm. And there are really very easy ways to determine that kind of value. You know, you can ask yourself, if this test failed, would I fix it? If this test failed, what does that mean? How many ways can it fail? Right. So each of those has a particular meaning. Right. If it can fail multiple ways, it's going to take you longer to resolve any potential issue. If you don't know what a failure means, then the test has no value to you because it's additional time that will take you to first figure out what the test is doing, and then second, figure if it's relevant, and then third, do I fix it?
Right. So also, you know, some of the time and cost invested in, you know, developing or maintaining these legacy test libraries, there is a feeling that this sometimes restricts engineers from rewriting the tests in a more modern test language. So is that a fair to say?
I'm not sure I understood the question. I'm sorry about that.
There are legacy tests which have been written in a particular way or using a particular language or a platform which was available at the time, staying with them, maintaining them, is there a chance that that could restrict people from rewriting them or, you know, modifying them in more modern languages or modern tools or platforms which are, you know, which obviously keep coming up?
Oh, I see. Yeah. So the question is really about, you know, you tend to have these tests that are specific to particular libraries or particular environments. And then
right.
At some point in the future, you might move away from those environments or they'll become less important to you. And then how does that affect the value of those tests? And generally, if you're in that position, you're the type of company that is doing some level of risk analysis already. Right? Mm-hmm. Just to be asking that question means you care at that level, which means you then are looking at, well, how much does each component of my application really affect the overall user experience, the safety, the security, or the mission criticality of my application, right? So that is going to help you determine how valuable those tests are and those older platforms are. Now, if there's some problem with that maintenance, maybe an older library is no longer available to you, or later updates of that library have conflicts and your legacy code isn't keeping up with that. There are any number of things that could make you look at that and want to make changes and maybe update that test base. But these are all things that you'll need to consider as a test expert within your company.
Sure. I mean, there have also been, you know, formal frameworks developed for detecting, you know, equivalent object states and redundant tests and so on. So to what extent do these help in, you know, defining or evaluating the quality of your overall tests?
Yeah. So talking about evaluating the quality of the test, we're really looking at what is it testing and what is the value of the results of the test, and then what is the cost of maintaining the test. So when it comes to creating the environment around the test or instantiating objects and what we call parameterizing the tests with some number of objects so that you have a single test maybe that you send in lots and lots of different values and turn it into more of a test harness rather than an individual test case, right? All these things go into helping you to say, well, clearly this test is getting a lot of runs. Clearly it's covering a large amount of code, so that's added value. Then you need to subtract, well, how much does it cost me to maintain this harness? Generally, what we see is the more a test gets re-leveraged, the less it costs to maintain it. And again, by re-leveraged, I'm talking about parameterization, like you were saying, the instantiation with many different objects or complex objects. So it's that level of reuse that really helps you determine that, oh, yes, this test is really valuable and low cost of maintenance, as opposed to that test, wow, there's all of this work, there's all this complexity to it, but it really only runs once and tests one thing. So maybe I don't get rid of it. Maybe I only run it when I'm about ready to release.
Right. So what kind of solutions or what kind of approaches should enterprise or organizations consider when they're dealing with a, you know, large body of legacy tests? What suggestions would you have?
Well, large body. We're talking about a large body of legacy tests. The number that comes to mind would be hundreds of thousands or millions of tests is what I've seen. And yeah, the types of complexities that you get at that scale, you see things like intermittent test failures. You know, it'll be passing and failing just from one day to the next. That'll change. Pass, fail. And you look at that, and some people will say, oh, well, development team says that they're working on that code right now. It's not really important. So, well, then why are you running the test if you're not even going to pay attention to the results?
Right.
So the legacy tests, when there's a very large body, what you really need to be asking yourself is, do I need to run all of those tests every day? Do I need to be running them as much as I am? And this is a little contrary to the continuous testing movement. I know it sounds contrary, but if you want to have a really legitimate continuous testing environment, it's important to only run the tests that are going to have maximum value. That way, you keep your test runs targeted. You do test every day. You do test continuously, but you're more selective about which tests get run at which point.
And talking a little bit about automation, I mean, when you have some legacy tests in existence, how easy is it for an enterprise to, you know, automate them? And, you know, what kind of problems are they likely to encounter in doing so?
So the biggest issue that comes up with automating test runs is you have to change your way of thinking. If you're coming from a manual approach, it's a different way of using the various tools you have at your disposal than in an automated approach. It requires more upfront attention to your test design and more attention to, like we were talking about earlier, re-leveraging and parameterizing tests. So you take these individual tests and you have to really pay much more attention to what are all those manual steps that I'm following and which of these can be automated either within the test or which needs to run before and after the test. And then once you get past that initial stage and you've designed it well, now you're going to look at, well, okay, let's think about if this is automated and I'm running it twice in a row, do I need to be concerned because now the system is in a different state, right? Because running these tests in stateful systems, which is pretty much every complex system that's doing this level of testing is stateful, you're going to change that state. You need a way to ensure that you have proper setup to put it into the correct state before the test run, and then proper teardown to return it to some baseline state so that any test that runs subsequently will be able to perform as expected?
Looking at, you know, any enterprise or any organization which has to deal with, you know, some legacy tests within their testing approach, what are the top two or three things that, or top two or three pieces of advice that you would give them?
Number one is don't rush it. And that's a hard one to follow because there's pressure from all over the place. But well understood that when you rush engineers, you get low quality. And if quality is your goal, you just can't do that. Okay, you have to work with them, work with your engineers, and as engineers, you need to work with your managers and your sales team who are, you know, they're feeling the same pressure. They're putting the pressure on you because that pressure is on them. So it's really about communication, understanding, and really helping each other to know where you're coming from. And if it's taking a long time, well, why is that? Don't be afraid to go into some details. If people you're talking to don't understand what you're saying, encourage them to ask questions. Make sure they get it, because when everyone's on the same page, you're going to have much, much better results overall.
All right. Interesting. So, Jason, where do you recommend our, you know, listeners can go to for information about some of the areas that you covered? I mean, are there any blogs, any sites that you would recommend to them that they could refer to?
You know, what I do is I have myself on more mailing lists than I can count. I just go all over the industry. You know, there's Mentor Graphics is excellent. IAR Systems, ARM has a number of wonderful articles that they put out. Just look up the major players in the embedded industry, and they really get testing at that level. They're borrowing so many of these methodologies that are well-practiced in the hardware world. And something that I'm trying out right now, maybe I'll just throw it out there, and if the listeners want it, they can give it a shot. But I look for some things outside of our field. So I'll look into even mechanical testing, and I'll see, well, what are the types of messages that they're sending? What are the types of problems that they're dealing with? And if I can relate that in some way back to software, then I've learned something new. And I've taken something that I can now apply to this industry that maybe it's not aware of.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Thank you so much for all that information, Jason. I'm sure the listeners would value what they heard today. So on behalf of everybody in the TPM group, let me thank you for your time again. And I'm sure we'll find another point to pick this conversation up with again in some time.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. So that's it, listeners. Another edition of Practical Software coming to a close. So do keep joining us as we get more guests giving more such fascinating information. This is Sanjeev Nambudiri signing off. Bye for now.